So here we are, just about to begin Mishnah Dalet, the fourth Mishnah in Perek Gimel. And the final comment that I wanted to make before the Mishnah is Ubashono, in the concept of Yer, Yeshnam Gimel Musogim Shoinim. There are three different ways that we look at that concept of Yer, besides a 12-month period, right? And they're a little different one from the other because we're talking about time as a primary and primal thing. So the first is machzer. We call a machzer that we take to shul, we call it a machzer because it's a cycle, because every year comes three times. We take it again and again and again. We take this same book and we keep coming back in a cycle. And so the year is a machzer. It goes around and around. So year has this connotation of cyclical. And then the second one is Zman, that Shona, Yer, is the concept of time, the passage of time, going from the past to the future through the now. That is also included in the concept of Shona. And then third is the concept of season, that there are different sorts of times, which is a very human way of looking at time. You know, like we came around to the millennium, the year 2000, and there was a frenzy all over the world. Like, for some reason, we associate certain numbers and certain times, we give them portent and meaning and so on. And so when we talk about Shona, we're talking about aspects of a particular time that we may not actually be in the now, but certain times, whether historically or in the calendar or in our memory, have great weight. And that's another aspect of Shona. So let's learn the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Sholosh Imois, Aleph Mem Shin, there are three mother letters, Aleph Mem and Shin, Bishona, in the year. Koir is cold, V'choim, and heat, Urovoyo. Revoyo, we usually understand revoyo as to be neither hot nor cold, but to be temperate. Choim nivro me'esh, heat comes from fire, koir mimayim, cold from water, revoyo, and here I've translated revoyo as fullness, miruach machria bintayim, so that there is in time there is something called the fullness of time. And that is, according to the Mishnah, that is an aspect of Ruach, something that comes from the very most primal beginnings of time. And that's Machria, tips the balance between the two. Let's have a look at the Si'if Kotor. Sholosh Imois. Number 42. Oison Sholosh Imois Sheomanu Le'el. These three mothers about whom we said above in Mishnah Beis, Shemehem Nivra HaKoil, that everything is created from these mothers. Yesh Lehem Tchuna She'enim Rak Oisiyos Nechtovos B'Ksav. They have aspects beyond simply being symbols that we use in writing. Ve'enon rak musogem k'mo imo shebehem soides, and they're not just mysterious glyphs about which we have lore that tells us, oh, there are secrets and there are hidden remazim, hints and so on in these letters in a literate way. Elo hein atzma moifias bishona, but the letters Aleph, Mem, and Shin, they actually appear throughout time. B'chol zman ve'ez, in every time. Note 43, B'shono. V'yesoidoi, the very first time we get the idea of Shono in the world, in the Torah, it says, V'yichi Adam shloshim u'me'as Shono. And Adam lived 130 years. V'yoled bidmusoi, and he gave birth in his own image. So here, Zeh Soid HaGilgul. This is the secret of Gilgul. You know, actually, I was asked this week, where do we find in Judaism, I mean, it's become in modern Judaism, or in modern in the sense of Hasidic pop Judaism, reincarnation has become very familiar and has become sort of taken for granted, but it's very difficult to find it in classic texts. So we can actually, if we look back to the Midrash, the very early Midrashim, we find this concept, the Issa B'Sforim, Sh'yoshev Av Odom Arishon Kuf Lamed Shona B'mei Gichon. Odom sat for 130 years after he and Chava were ejected from the Garden of Eden. They fell out with one another. And Odom and Chava were no longer intimate with one another. And so for 130 years, they were separated. And Adam sat in a river, in the river Gichon, for 130 years, up to his neck. And he gave birth there to spirits and demons. And these, what it's suggesting is that with Adam separating from Chava, so his semen was wasted, and so instead of giving birth to children, it gave birth to disembodied spirits, which were very holy spirits that wanted to come into the world, but because they came through this unclean or impure, unnatural way, Belina Kevel, without Adam being connected to his wife. So Vahashido Eloikhisois and Matipois, so the demon would take these drops of semen, Miss Aberis Bohem, and would incubate them. Uboinim Lahem Gufin, and then would create quasi bodies. Ubo Gilgulim Pam Achapam, and so these creatures, which were really a representation of the children that Adam didn't have, are born again and again. Kemoshe Farsh Dalan, as will be explained. In the Gemara that we mentioned above, in the preface, the Gemara in Chulin, we learned about the moon and how the moon made a suggestion to God about two kings not being able to wear a single crown, and God saying to the moon, then, okay, so diminish yourself. So at the end of the dialogue, the Talmud tells us, Chazir delokum mistiva data, God could see that the moon wasn't satisfied. Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu heviu kaporo olai, bring a atonement for me, shemi'atati yisayireach, that I diminished the moon. Behind the Dhamma Reb Shimon Lakish, and then the Gemara ends by saying, and this is what Reb Shimon Ben Lakish meant when he said, Ma'anishtanu so'esh Rosh Chodesh, why is the goat the sin offering of the new moon of Rosh Chodesh? Why is it different? Shenema Boy Lashem, there it says, Chatos Lashem, a sin offering for God. O Ma'akodesh Baruch Hu, God says to the moon, So'erze yehi kapur alay shemiyatati esayirech, that every month on the holiday of the new moon, on the Rosh Chodesh, there was a special ritual in the temple where a sin offering would be offered, a goat, about which the Torah tells us, Chatos Lashem. Why? Because God says, I need you to atone for me, I need the Jewish people to atone for me for having diminished the moon. And we learned in the Me'a Shiloyach, in Parsha Shemini, and this is what he says, Miut hayorech, the diminution of the moon, hu hachesoren shebishoyrish kol nivre. It's a metaphor. The Gemara is being subtle. And the truth is, we're none of us perfect. And the diminution of the moon is a metaphor for the diminution of humanity, that we are flawed, and we the chances of us being able to work through through our issues and develop and evolve to really be able to act at the level of the potential that we have, it's not likely to happen. We're so burdened by maybe not our own problems, but we've inherited problems. You know, we are humans, and so, you know, we are a product of the way that we're nurtured, and regardless of our nature, nurture leaves us struggling. And so when God says bring a kapora for me for diminishing the moon, it's not simply for this lump of rock that we see in the sky, but that part of us, in fact it's the right brain, that part of us, the feminine part of us, that which we call the feminine part of us, which is overridden by the left brain. So as the Novi Yeshaya says, according to the Meshlech, v'pesh o poshea mi beten korolach, that God calls you a sinner from the womb, because however perfect you're born as a baby, by the time you're old enough to express it, it's not there anymore. Ki kol nivra noisa hahefsed, because every creature carries some of this loss. V'ho odam tzorech lesakin zois, and what is our thing in life, our mission, if you will, our purpose, our ambition, our goal is to fix the loss, or to find what's lost and put it back. And when we look at that loss in us that we didn't cause, and which we struggle our whole life, then we have this tremendous taina atzuma, a really powerful argument, complaint at God. Lama bora oisa b'chasuret? Why did you make me like I am? I accept that you made me as I am, and that I'm perfect as I am, but I'm not perfect, and I struggle with my shortcomings. V'zehu heviu kapora alai shemiyata tisirech, says the Ishmael. So that's the meaning of God saying, well, I need you. It's a very radical idea, right? That God says, I need you, not to forgive me, no, I need you to take the blame. Heviu kapora alai shemiyata tisirech, bring a sin offering for me that I diminish the moon. U'bezeh kaveyochel HaKadosh Baruch Hu nikrubalim. So then God is the owner of that carbon, of that sacrifice. V'zehu hakohanim oichlim v'habalim mischaprim. And the rule is that when you bring a sin offering, first you do the vidui, the confession, and then the animal is slaughtered, and those parts of it that are offered on the altar are burned on the altar, and then the kohen priest eats the carbon, eats the meat. And the kapora happens, the atonement happens, when the kohen eats. Kohanim oichlim, ubalim is kaprim. So, ki ba'achilas ha-kohanim mizeh ha-karban, this is a really deep and challenging suggestion the Meir Shiloich is about to make. Ki ba'achilas kohanim mizeh ha-karban, when the Kohanim eat of the carbon, of this sacrifice, of this monthly sacrifice, Shluchenu Heim, they are our Shluchim, they are our messengers, our proxy. She'anachnu Mekablim, that we accept upon ourselves, She'anachnu Chayovim Gam B'zeh HaChasorim, that we take upon ourselves the responsibility even for that flaw that God put in us, for aleinu mitl l'sakne, and that we don't say, well, God made it in us, and God, you know, made us with this challenge, and we don't, it's not our business, you know, we don't have to look at it. But on the contrary, by eating, by by bringing this monthly carbon, God says, Heviu kapora olai, atone for me. How do we atone for God? By saying, it's not God's fault. It's ours. We have to fix. V'yisa b'zoya kodesh, we learn in the Zoya, Amidus Yisod HaNikru Musaf. The Zohar Kodesh talks about the Sefirah, the sixth Sefirah, which is called Yisod, which I always translate as fundament. HaNikro Musaf, that the Midas Yisod is connected with the Musaf. Yisod the Alma, Ikra Musaf. That's what the Zohar Kodesh says. The foundation of the world is called Musaf. V'chein Shem Yosef. And so the Zohar Kodesh makes a connection between the name Yosef and the word Musaf. And we learn from there, Shayochim kol karbonos mesofim leYosef atzadik. So, just as we say that Avraham tikkun shachris, that Avraham was the one who founded the morning service, Yitzchak says leEs erev, Yitzchak founded the Mincha service. Yaakov davened there at night, Kivos Shemesh. Yaakov was the one who founded the night time prayer. Yosef is the one in whose merit we were zeichet to the Musaf, to the additional service. Ubifrat Musaf to Rosh Chodesh, especially the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. You know, the word Musaf means to add. And there's only one part of the body that adds, right? There's the one part of the body that grows, which is associated with Midas Yisoid. And that is why Yosef is Midas Yisoid as the Musaf, because the Musaf service, the Musaf service is the additional one, and there's one part of the body that grows, which is associated with Midas Yisoid, the fundament, which is the sexuality. So Yosef, his name already contains within it the secret that he's going to be responsible for Midas Yisoid. V'Aaron HaKohen, so now we have this drama where Aaron, the high priest, did not want to eat this carbon, the sacrifice of the first of the month, the very first atonement for God. Kama Shivai Mitz Hashem Halon, as will be explained in the fifth chapter. So to boil it all down, Shikaparosa Yizborach Al Miat Hayireach, God's atonement for the diminution of the moon, Hoyetoyle Bischus Yosef, depends on the merit of Yosef. Shishayochim Karban is Musafim Lechelke, because the Musaf, the additional service in the temple, depends on Yosef. The Yosef Hurad Mitzrayma, and Yosef gets sent down to Egypt, Vinishaivu Asura Eruge Malchus, Al Mechirosai, and the 10 martyrs who represented the 10 brothers who sold him are later indicted for the sale of Yosef. Why 10? Alasora tipin shiyotsu mitachas ro Yosef, for the 10 drops of sperm that Yosef shed when it came to the story of the drama of the wife of Potiphar. Kama shemuv leel b'psich leper gimlas, was mentioned above in the preface to the chapter. V'Rebbe Akiva tumurosu ikava yochol, and Rebbe Akiva is the substitute, so to speak, for God, who was the 10th Kedele El B'Psiche B'mama Reb Shimon Ostropari. We brought the text from Reb Shimon of Ostropari that Rebbe Akiva represents the divine. U'kesh'om HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe, when God says to Moshe, as we read the story, Moshe comes up to heaven and he sees God tying the crowns to the letters, and he says, show me who this is, and it turns out it's Rabbi Akiva, and he sees the death of Rabbi Akiva, and Moshe is astonished at the brutality and the vulgarity and the violence and the, just, it's too horrible, and he complains, and God says, shtoik, be quiet. Kach olam b'machashova, the death of Rabbi Akiva is something that arose in the thought. So here again, we're being invited, just as the Ishbitzer told us that the miut hayerech, the diminution of the moon, is a much larger metaphor, and it's about us. We see here also that Moshe is told that the death of Rabbi Akiva is olah b'machshava. It was there in the thought before the creation of the world. Well, the death of Rabbi Akiva is also associated with the Mechiras Yosef, the selling of Yosef, and also the selling of Yosef jeopardizes the diminution of the moon, the Kapora that God asks us to bring, and so on. We see here that many threads come together. Romas Shaloi Rak Mrs. Rabbi Akiva, it's not just hinting in the Olah B'Machshava, the death of Rabbi Akiva, but Gam Mechiras Yosef, Gam in Advarim Shaloi B'Machshava. So the sale of Yosef is also something that is there in the original thought. Shetoli Hobo, because they depend on one another. V'soid Miyatay Reach. So to bring it back, this mystery of the diminution of the moon is here in this Shana. When we talk about in our Mishnah the year, we're very much conscious that even before the creation of those luminaries and the celestial bodies that make our calendar, everything has already been interfered with by the Machashova, the original thought about these tragedies and dramas that will be unfolding. So we have Kor V'Chaim. This is note number 44. We have the cold and the heat, V'Chin Hu B'Yesoidoi, and this is how we find it in, this is a direct quote, Kor V'Chaim, which actually is cold and heat. It's a Pasuk in Bereishis, Oid Kol Yimei Ha'oretz, all the days of the earth, Zera V'Kotzer, seed time and harvest, V'kor v'choim, and cold and heat, v'kayetz v'choyrev, and summer and winter, v'yoim v'laylo, and day and night, lo yishboisu, they will not rest. So we have here these six times: zera v'kotzir, seed time and harvest time; kor v'choim, cold and hot; kayetz v'choyrev, summer and winter; Yom V'Laila. So it's interesting, the Mishnah here had a choice. He could say cold and hot, he could have said summer and winter. He could have said we have summer and winter, and then we have that something, that third thing in the middle. But in fact, and we would have recognized that, it would have been much more familiar. But the Mishnah chose not to use the phrase summer and winter because it didn't want to get into the temporal, the calendar time that we are most familiar with, and wants to use conceptual time. And hot and cold is a better vehicle for that. And then the Mishnah tells us that on the one hand you have koir, cold, and choim, heat, and revoyo, this whatever, this neither heat nor cold, which is in the middle. So the word is chosen is revoyo. And it's a very difficult word to translate. Well, you know, we say koisi revoyo, in Psalm 23, Shem Roi lo yachsar, God is my shepherd, I will not want. He leads me by still waters and gives me a feast in before my enemies. Koisi revoyo, my cup runneth over. This is how we usually translate revoyo, koisi revoyo, my cup runneth over. And it's very nice and poetic, but it doesn't really have a shoyrish. So let's have a look at this word revoyo. Because certainly revoyo, if we try and take that idea of a cup running over, it doesn't fit into our Mishnah, where we've got on the one side hot and the one side cold, in the middle we've got revoyo. So the first time the word Revoy appears in the Torah, it's in Deuteronomy, and it says God is admonishing us and telling us, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us, whatever we do, we must avoid pagan worship and idolatry. And there are people, he says, who are listening here today, who are thinking, everything will be nice. Sholom yelib, shridus libi, eilech, I'll go my own way. I'm not gonna worry about any of this stuff. Leman's voice, harovo es hatzmeo. So, the word rovo, resh vov hei, is translated variously in order to surround the fullness with thirst. Sefois is to surround, rovo, the fullness, tsmeo, with thirst. It's not exactly easy to understand then the context of that verse in Deuteronomy. So there, everybody says, everything's going to be fine, I'm not going to worry about Moshe's admonishment, I'm just going to go on with my pagan worship, in order to surround the fullness with thirst. So the Ramban, he says, Nefesh Seveya Tikra Rova. He says, if you're satisfied, if you're full up, if you're in fullness, that's called Rova. Ke'inim V'Ravisi Nefesh Akoyanim Doshen. And he brings a proof from the verse in Jeremiah, I'll fill the soul of the priests with abundance. The soul will be like a garden that's well watered. The Ramban says, and then the opposite of that is thirst or desire, and that's so. Revoya, according to the Ramban, is this sense of you've had enough. Say tzomelach nafshi, my soul thirsts for you. That's the opposite of rova. The Ksav HaKabbalah, and I brought the Ramban because the Ramban is really representative of how most of the early commentators try and understand this word in that context. The Ksav HaKabbalah, the 19th century, the German Jewish scholar, he says like this, Ki ha-revoyo b'shtiyo kmo yasviyo ba'achila. That revoyo in drinking is like svio ba'achila. Just as we say a person is satisfied by eating, a person would say he is rovo from drinking. He's full up. You don't get satisfied by drinking, you get full up. Okay. Tzmeo, he says, that the hunger, hikino el ha-nefesh ha-mis'ave tomit. When we say tzomo nafshi, my soul is hungry. So what does it mean? It means a soul that is full of desire to fill itself up with the object of its desire. V'chush teshukas hatavis k'choim hatzome lishtois. So this psychic or intellectual or emotional desire or thirst or longing is the equivalent of the raging thirst of that a person may have to drink. So intellectual longing and the desire, spiritual desire, is known as thirst. V'hamemala tavois. So it's somebody who fills his tavis, his desires. Doime eloi shemoira umasbias, shemerava umasbias atzmoi. So we say that this person has filled themselves up and satisfied their intellectual or spiritual desires. Ulam ksiv. These are very nice ways of looking at this verse, but it doesn't really hold up. It says in Tehillim, in Psalm 66, Bonu be'eshav amayim, we've come through fire and water, v'atoytzienu, and you brought us through there, l'ravoyo, and you delivered us to fullness, or to satisfaction. Well, that would seem to suggest that coming through fire and water is what revoyo is. She'ef she'lidrash misham she'pirish revoyo k'may avim emuzag me'eshim imayim, that when you juggle fire and water, or when you balance them, that's the meaning of revoyo. But if you say so, then the verse in Psalm 23 that we talked about early, Koisi Revoyo, my cup runs over. What does it mean then when you say Koisi Revoyo? If Revoyo is a balance between fire and water, Venira li Balil, so I have to think about it a long time. I have to come to this conclusion. Shema Shemeduba Kamba Mishnah Senu, that here in our Mishnah, when talking Loirak Alashonah Shal Yudbeis Chadoshim, we're not just talking about time in the sense of 12 months. Ela Alashonah Vahishtanah Shebo'odam. We're talking about the year, the cycle, the change that we go through, that humans go through. Urovoyo, so then this word Revoyo means the opposite of thirst. Vuhu Acheshik. So there's the idea of passion, and then there's the idea of desire. They're not necessarily the same thing. Pirish gan rova inenu gan she'en lo tzimoin. A garden that is rova, that is full, does not mean a garden that has had its thirst quenched. That's not what it means. Elo shenirva hatzimoim v'nitin lo koyach lisfoig oid maim. What it means is that if you take earth and you let it dry out, it won't absorb water. It will cake up. It's like a sponge. If you take a real natural sponge from the sea and you leave it, it will dry out. And then when you put it into water, it will just float on the water, and in fact, if you hold it under the tap, it won't even absorb water. It's only when you allow the sponge to get wet, to become damp, and you squeeze it out, that's when it starts to absorb water. And the same thing is with soil. If you look at a dry river bed or a dry lake bed, or you know, if you look at the earth during a drought, when the earth has started to crack and these deep fissures, and then it starts to rain, you watch the earth, it does not absorb water. The earth doesn't absorb water until it gets wet. The wetting process is, like we say, to wet the thirst, means to sharpen the thirst. Gan Rova means a garden that is irrigated, and when it is constantly irrigated, it is thirsty all the time. It can absorb water. A earth that is damp will absorb water. Earth that is completely dry will not absorb water. It doesn't display that hunger to draw the water into itself. So now, we understand now, rova is a gan rova is a garden that is kept moist all the time, and so it is ready to absorb. V'yesh bo'odam cheshik, so a person has desire, habom yesoid hamayim, that comes from, we talked about the three yesoides, the fire in the head, the air in the thorax, and the water in the abdomen, and that a person's desires, the most basic desires, are those that we feel in the stomach, which are connected with the yesod hamayim, with the element of water. V'yesh hislahavus, but there's something else that's called passion. Habom yesod ha'esh, that comes from the yesod of the element of fire. V'hem dvorim afechem, they're really different things. Because hunger, thirst, desire is the experience, the sensation of emptiness and want. Vehislahavas, passion, he hergish hakoyach hashebedam. When a person feels passion, they're feeling the power in their own blood. Sheboy mislahet aguf, that the body develops. I guess it's endocrinal or a hormonal thing, but a person impassioned, right, feels an adrenaline rush and so on. Umischamim, umisoira, a person becomes heated and aroused. Lepoyo pu'uloisav, to do what he wanted to do. So then we now have an understanding that passion and desire are not the same thing. And so we go to note number 46. Choim, heat then, is his lahavis beli cheshik, his passion without desire. V'hu mezik kosher la'odim k'may akas v'haroiges, a person can become enraged. That is passion without desire. It's just the adrenaline rush and the endocrinal system, and the person has like aroused them to tremendous passion, right? Person's red in the face and ready to what? Just ready. Kim yesh l'odem gam cheshi, because if a person has desire at the same time that they have passion, b'shas rugza as a cheshik moizgoy, then the desire is mitigated. It's like adding a little water to the wine, moizgin koisrishin, right? We have to add, because in the olden times wine would be like a syrup, so it wasn't really drinkable until you added a little water. That's the word mezek, is to add a little of another substance in order to make the first palatable, meaningful. So if a person has some desire while they have passion, then they work together and much more likely to get something useful. Shetir k'moy rugze d'rabonon. If a person has desire to learn Torah, then they can be very impassioned, but it's a beautiful passion, right? If you've been into Beis Medrash and you hear people, rabbonim, students, talmidei chachamim, yeshiva bachim, shouting at each other, right? The Gemara says, Omer Rova, haitzu b'merabonon d'roscha, when you find these scholars who are so irascible and shouting at each other, insulting each other, if you've been in Beis Medrash, you see people learning Torah and it gets very heated, right? So what is it? It's passion, but there's a desire. That's underneath the passion, there's a desire to learn. So these two work together. And the Gemara brings a proof, because it says, Halei dvorai ke'eshnu mashem, my words are like God, like fire, says God. On the other hand, note 47, koir, you have cold. We said, cheshik b'li hislahavas, if you have desire, cravings, without passion, that is koir, that's cold. Desire isn't hot. Desire is the experience of lack, that emptiness. It's a very dangerous thing, la'odam. Because if a person experiences desire without passion, it's very easy to end up with all sorts of vices, hatred and resentment. There's covetousness and depression, ultimately depression, which is the inward turning of the desires and frustration and powerlessness. Because a person who experiences desires but doesn't have energy or motivation to rouse themselves, to go chasing after them, somebody simply nurses them in their bosom, then those desires, they are like vipers nursed in the bosom, because they bite, they stink, they poison, they're toxic. So revoyo meruach machria bentayim. So if we go to note 48, so then we can understand revoyo from the spirit tips the balance between them. Pirish hakoyach ba'odam. What is revoyo then? Revoyo is that power in a person, shaloytis yabish nafshoy, that a person's soul should never dry up. V'tomid mishnoikek l'dvorim chadoshim and it irrigates the soul so that the soul is always ready for something new. It prevents the soul becoming parched. In the Me'er Shiluch, we learned about the Pasuk Avraham Zokein Baba Yomim. At the end of Parshas Chayesor, it talks about Avraham becoming old. Avraham was old, getting on in days. V'Hashem Berech Avraham Bakoil, and God blessed Avraham Bakoil with everything. So the Medrash brings a Pasuk V'Zeho Yochelki Mikol Amoli, and this is what's left to me from all my toil. And the Gemara says, Rav Shmuel, there's an argument between Rav and Shmuel, Chad Ome Makloi V'Chad Ome Kidoi. You know, Shlomo HaMelech at the end of his life said, and this is all that's left to me from all my work. And one says that refers to his plate, and the other one says it refers to his staff. And the Ishbitz explained, what is a plate? A plate is a clay kibble. It's something in which you receive the soup, the food, whatever. So Shlomo HaMelech was thanking God for leaving him with a plate, meaning with the desire to receive. That however brilliant King Solomon was, he never lost the desire to learn something new. And this is how he and this is how he comforted himself in his old age in the loss of all his powers, that nevertheless he never lost the desire to learn, because that's the main thing in this world and in this life. Avraham is old, getting on in days. He comes to this zikna, which we associate zekon chokhma. The Gemara says, what is zikna? That is the acquisition of wisdom. So Avram bo bayomim, he reaches the very source of his own life force. V'hoye klei kibul, v'hoye keli, and he realized that he was still a vessel to receive. V'hishtoikik lahisof haschaim, and even though he was 150, 160, 170 years old, he never lost the desire to receive from God. And that's when the meaning of Hashem Berech Avraham Bakoil, that God blessed Avraham with everything, because if you have the desire to receive, then you're still alive and you still have everything. So now if we look at the Mishnah, we see that Revoyo, which we have so much difficulty in translating, that it actually means, it's a very subtle concept, that by keeping something moist, so koisi revoya then might mean not my cup spills over, but that if you keep it, let's say if you have a terracotta cup, right, if so long as you keep it moist and you don't allow it to completely dry out, then you can put water in it and it will hold water. If you take this terracotta and you allow it to dry out completely, it will crack and then it won't hold water. So koisi revoya means that God constantly keeps my cup watered, and so it's able to hold water. And in the sense that David HaMelech is talking about himself, that God never allows him to dry out and then become incapable of receiving something new, that God is constantly giving David HaMelech new impetus and new experiences and the shefa that never stops to flow. And so David HaMelech remains the clay kibble, he remains capable of receiving. So on the one side we have koir, which is taiva, cold, which represents the element of water, which represents desire and that feeling of, oh, I don't have enough. On the other hand, we have choim, we have heat, which is that element that is aroused and passionate. And then we have the revoyo, which constantly puts a little bit of water into the fire, a little bit of fire into the water, so we're never without passion and desire, and we're always ready to be aroused. And this is the meaning of shona, change, that we never fall into a pattern or into too deep a rut. We never reach that place where we become incapable of growing and changing. And in order for us to keep the ability to grow and change, we have to have this mezek, We have to have this combination of desire and passion, which never leaves us. Koir v'choim, urevoyim achria b'neihem.